Data dashboards, artificial intelligence punch lists, trend charts. Our obsession with metrics may be damaging our lives and our institutions. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton explores the tyranny of metrics with a critic of the field. And that chat begins now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. Ever had an annual review at work? Yeah, they're terrible. Of course, the data varies from company to company, but it's still data points on a progress chart or an expectation graph. But what if those data points are irrelevant? It could generate a type of workplace false positives. Long story short, it is likely a massive waste of time. That's the tyranny of metrics, a slavish commitment to using data collection to predict and improve outcomes, whether it's at work or in medicine, healthcare, policing, basically anything.
Once I had some inkling of how distortive and wasteful this process could be, then I started to read about it and ask colleagues in a wide variety of fields, I mean outside of academia, in medicine and the military and so on, and that led me to write the book. I thought that I had spotted a pattern that was ubiquitous in a wide range of organizations and was doing a lot of damage.
This week we have a scholar and an author whose expertise lands where capitalism and society meet. More on our misguided fixation on metrics starts now.
Jerry Mueller, professor of history at the Catholic University of America.
Professor Mueller, are you tenured, or do you have employee reviews every year?
Well, the two are not incompatible. That is to say, I am tenured. I have been tenured for a long time, but there is an annual review, which I conducted when I was chair of the department,
right,
and now is conducted by the chair of the department.
The only reason I ask is because the first thing I thought of when I saw the tyranny of metrics, and the first thing that came into my mind was, in a previous life, I was a department head for a national broadcasting corporation. And the first thing I did was I suspended employee annual reviews until my boss unsuspended them shortly thereafter. I found them to be quite useless. What was the premise behind this book? What drove you, in a very macro way, to write the tyranny of metrics?
You know, it was a combination of long-term interest that I've had in the history of capitalism and its organizations, together with sort of medium-term interest that I've had in developments in public policy that increase that, certainly from the time of No Child Left Behind at the beginning of the 21st century, we're increasingly focusing on these issues of measuring and rewarding and publicizing performance and trying to replace judgment with standardized measures of performance and rewarding them monetarily or honorifically. So that was the larger public policy issues that got me into it. And then the short term, the sort of trigger, was the fact that when I was chair of the department, at a certain point, we started getting more and more requests from the administration for more and more of this standardized data. And the motive force behind it wasn't the administration of the university. It was the accrediting agency that accredits colleges and universities, and they in turn were responding to pressure from the Department of Education that was moving increasingly in this direction. And once I had some inkling of how distortive and wasteful this process could be, then I started to read about it and ask colleagues in a wide variety of fields, I mean outside of academia, in medicine and the military and so on, and that led me to write the book. I thought that I had spotted a pattern that was ubiquitous in a wide range of organizations and was doing a lot of damage.
Did you find in your research that the overuse of data can be almost a crutch in certain situations?
Yes. I mean, if you bring in a consultant nowadays, the first thing they tell you to do is get more numbers, get more data. There's a lot of hype around AI, artificial intelligence, that you can process more and more data. There's a lot of hype around purported discoveries in behavioral psychology about the biases that we have and how bad our judgment is. And so the idea is that you compensate for that by using standardized measurement. And if you put those things together with the notion that what really motivates people is rewarding their performance through bonuses or monetary gains on the one hand, or reputational gains, that is to say by rankings and league tables, as they call them in Great Britain and so on. You put all those things together, the notion that judgment is unreliable, so you got to base things on standardized performance, standardized measures of performance, and then you have to recognize that by making it public, and then you have to reward people according to those standardized measures. Those are all ideas that individually have something to be said for them, but there's an overuse of them, and especially when you put them together, it creates this kind of toxic brew that I call metric fixation.
Right.
Yeah, so there's all of those problems, and it starts with what I've come across a term recently that captures this quite well, and that is the notion of measurability bias. That is, when you emphasize the things that can be measured because they can be measured or because they can be easily measured, then it leads you to lose perspective on those things, to lose perspective on how important the things that you can measure are compared to the things that you can't measure in an organization.
Well, Professor, you hit on two things that are going to pull me off of my notes because I'm intrigued. Let's start with the second one, because you just mentioned bias. I recently had an author on, and she wrote The Weapons of Math Destruction, and her premise was that there is inherent bias and sometimes unconscious or subconscious bias built into algorithms. Mm-hmm. And when I read your book, which is the other end of it, I can't help but think about garbage in, garbage out.
I mean, there is a question of garbage in, garbage out. I think the question of those algorithms has to do with, some of it has to do with, as you say, how you process it, what sorts of categories that you use and so on. It also, of course, raises the question of to what degree can you hold individuals responsible for being part of a class of people or some classification of people that they may fit into but that may not actually predict their own future performance. But that gets us more into her book than to mine.
Exactly. And at the top of your answer, you mentioned artificial intelligence, and I kind of want to jump ahead a little bit. Do you see artificial intelligence as a possible way to get better results? Maybe are we refining our tactics, at least trying to avoid negative unintended consequences?
It certainly has potential advantages in terms of improving analysis when getting information about a very wide range of cases helps to improve your analysis. But then the question is always, what's the relationship between the generalization or general conclusion that is generated by that artificial intelligence and the particular case in front of you? So I know in medicine, for example, there IBM and others are increasingly making use of masses of data gathered through artificial intelligence and trying to advise doctors on that basis. But there's usually a gap that requires some knowledge based on experience and judgment about the particular person in front of you. That means that even if you have pretty good analysis based on artificial intelligence, you still have a question of judgment about how applicable it is in the particular case in front of you. And that seems to me to be, even when the AI is good, which it isn't always, the question of how its findings compare to the particular case in front of you is, I think, always going to leave room for judgment and experience, though the people who are pushing AI often do so on the premise that they can eliminate the role of judgment and experience.
In that answer, you mentioned medicine. So let's go back to there. What were your findings when it comes to the fixation on data and metrics?
As so often, metrics, in the sense of measuring standardized performance, can be really useful depending on who's using it and how. If you take measurements, for example, of the degree of infection in a hospital unit, there's two ways of using that are really very different. One is to report to various hospital units what their level of infection is for a given problem compared to comparable hospital units within, say, the same hospital system. So that's a kind of diagnostic use of it. And if it's used by the practitioners themselves, that is to say the doctors and nurses and administrators who work in those units, they can consult with people who in other units who had a better record and see what they're doing better. And in that sense, whenever you have standardized measures of performance that are used by the practitioners themselves for diagnosis and analysis, then they can be very useful. But what frequently happens, and happens increasingly in the case of medicine, is that those measures of performance are then attached to rewards and punishments, so that the government agencies that fund the hospitals and so on say, well, we will, if you have a higher than average level of infection in your unit, we will lower your payments. And once you do that, once you start to connect standardized measures of performance with reward and punishment, then you start to get into all the issues of metric fixation that I talk about. So issues like the extent to which organizations will engage in goal diversion. That is, they'll focus on improving the metric of what gets rewarded and punished, but at the expense of other important functions that the organization is supposed to do. Or you'll have all sorts of forms of gaming the metrics, for example, in the field of medicine, of eliminating patients from the patient pool who have a higher than average risk of something going wrong.
Right.
So that in the case of surgical report cards, for example, once those were instituted in some states for surgeons, that is to say, a report card that indicated the degree of success and failure of a particular surgeon in a particular operation, one found that some surgeons, actually not a few surgeons, simply wouldn't take on riskier patients because they didn't want to damage their scores. So you have that kind of gaming of the metrics.
What I thought was kind of a scary but very applicable chapter title for number 15 was Unintended but Predictable Negative Consequences. That's what we're talking about here, aren't we?
Yes. You know, my book, as you indicated, is based on reading a lot of research that's been done in a lot of disparate fields. And all disparate fields that have tried this pattern of what I call metric fixation, and looking at the kind of systematic way in which things tend to go wrong as a result of this overemphasis on measurement and publicizing the measurement and rewarding and punishing those who are involved with the measurement.
You have in chapter 16 a checklist, and that's your secret sauce, and I want people to buy the book, so we're not going to dive into that. But okay. I'll just ask you a rather 30,000-foot question. Culturally speaking, is there a way to come back from where we are on this?
So to be quite honest, one of the main reasons I wrote the book is because this is a sort of ubiquitous pattern in a wide range of contemporary organizations, certainly including in business with an emphasis on short-term bottom-lineism at the expense of the larger future of the firm. I think the most valuable thing that I can do at this point is try to raise people's consciousness of this as a problem that has been investigated in many fields, shown to be deeply problematic and often counterproductive, and sort of raise people's consciousness in a wide range of organizations about why they ought to be more careful and more sparing and make more use of judgment in their use of standardized performance metrics.
Professor Jerry Mueller, the new book is The Tyranny of Metrics, Full Transparency. Professor, I've wanted to speak with you for a while. I read The Mind and the Market, Capitalism and Western Thought about 10 years ago, an outstanding book. So I'm going to plug both of your books right there. Is that okay?
I'm grateful for that. They're very different kinds of books, but they come out of common interest in the history of capitalism and culture in modern history, yes.
And in my neck of the woods here in Silicon Valley, this book, The Tyranny of Metrics, is something that I think should be almost required reading up and down the valley.
I presume it's pretty countercultural in the Silicon Valley context.
That's why we're going to try to raise the awareness around it. Professor Mueller, this has been my pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks very much for speaking to me.
That was Professor Jerry Mueller. His new book is The Tyranny of Metrics. Professor Mueller has written several books on how capitalism and its trappings have rubbed against society in positive and mostly negative ways. The book explains why the seemingly irresistible pressure to quantify performance distorts and distracts, whether by encouraging gaming the stats or teaching to the test. That's because what can and does get measured is not always worth measuring. I can also highly recommend one of his prior titles, The Mind and the Market, Capitalism in Western Thought. So to break the chains of metrics fixation, you can check the source links for this week's show. The article and show notes are at KGORadio.com. We also socialize them at Facebook.com/Techonomics. And I'm on Twitter. I'm at KGO Jason. Coming up after the break, trade tensions, tariffs, the Fed, and inflation. But
this is the time to make hay while the sun shines. This is the time to be paying down debt, particularly variable rate debts. Boost your savings. That way you're better positioned to weather an economic storm whenever that may come. And look, Jason, it may be a couple years away, but again, now's the time to be preparing for the time when things aren't as good as they are today.
We're getting macroeconomic with a forecast for the rest of the year next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.